mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining. And they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining.
So did you go to summer camp? What were your experiences? Do you have any funny stories to share? What lessons did you learn from summer camp? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. As summer approaches, it is time for many people, more than 14 million children and adults annually, to pack up and head to summer camp. We will talk with an author who will share his experiences as a camper and a camp director, and we will welcome your questions, your stories, your memories of summer camp. And we'll talk about whether kids today could use some more summer camp outdoors in nature and a little more time unplugged. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Eric Dregney. He teaches English at Concordia University in St. Paul, Minnesota. He is the author of many books, including Vikings in the Attic, In Search of Nordic America. He is the dean of an Italian immersion camp in Minnesota, and he is the author of You're Sending Me Where? Dispatches from Summer Camp. And he joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Good morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Joy. It's a pleasure to be on.
It's great to have you. So I have just a few memories of summer camp. It was Girl Scout camp, not exactly, which is close enough.
That's still camp, yeah.
Yeah, that's close enough. I wasn't gone the whole summer, though. tell us about your very first experience with summer camp. This is hilarious. You were 6 years old, and you did not want to go.
Yeah, so my mom was a camp counselor at one of those camps where they sent kids away for 2 months in the summer, and she just insisted that her son was going to be one of those kids that goes out to camp. And so at 6 years old, she put me on the bus, and I had no intention of going on the bus. So I remember putting my hands out and, like, stopping myself against the frame of the bus door, and she just pushed me on. And the bus driver was able to shut the door and zoom away, and I cried the whole way there. It was terrible. But then, you know, once I got there, I realized, well, wait a minute. They're letting us use BB guns. They let us use BB guns at 6 years old.
Ooh.
Back then. And bow and arrows, and then, wow. And then we had these swamp stomps and these big mud pits, and then we go swimming, and I'm like, this is great. Climbing trees. Why wouldn't I want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So I came home at the end of the day. That was just a day camp at that point. And I just wanted to ignore that whole experience in the morning, and I wanted to go back. And so here I am many, many years later, and I'm able to go back to camp during the summer, which is such a treat.
Yeah, that is such a great story. So you just were freaked out, did not want to go, and then you fell in love with it. And you went many times after that? Talk about, were you a summer camper most of your life?
Yeah, so I went to camp, Camp Icaguan in Wisconsin, and so that was, you know, these river trips up in northern Wisconsin, the, you know, Namekagon, the upper St. Croix, all of those great rivers. So that's where I went, and, you know, just going out into the wilderness, these wilderness camps, of course, you are completely unplugged, and then you just have to survive out there. You learn about mosquitoes and all the animals and all the wildlife and the plants, and, you know, and of course, in the book, the best stories are the mishaps, of course. If everything goes fine, there's not really a story there. So you have all these incidents with animals, all these other things, you know, and the other campers, you know, the misbehaving campers and the counselors who are usually, you know, college students have the summer off and they're dealing with all these kids running around.
Yeah. And I was going to say, when I mentioned that I went to Girl Scout camp, it was just a couple of times, and it was just for a couple, like an overnight or something. At least that's the way it was when I went to camp. I mean, camps can be anywhere from a day camp experience to an overnight to weeks or more, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's usually, you know, camp has sort of been appropriated as a word for summer school now, too. Like, oh, these camps, and basically it's going and doing math in a classroom. So you have, I mean, for me, it's like, okay, the day camp is sort of that precursor of the overnight camp, and which is, overnight camp is usually, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks. And I just think for kids, it's such an essential part of growing up that they're away from home, away from their folks, that they're out in the woods, and that they learn how to deal with that. Especially, you know, we're in the North Woods. I mean, the summer, you don't want to be in the city. You don't want to be in your basement playing video games. You want to be outside.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we don't want to be in the basement playing video games, but maybe kids today would want to be in the...
Exactly.
What were you leaving behind? I mean, you said it was great to be able to be outside and shoot your BB gun and probably build fires. Boys like to build fires, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I love to build fires. No, and that was... I talk about, you know, in Amory, Wisconsin, our camp there... And how the kids, there are always these little pyromaniacs, of course.
Yep.
And this one kid, he wanted to light a fire. And the counselors were sunbathing down by the beach. And so he wanted to, you know, he found the matches. And then he tried to get, you know, you have to start it with kindling and paper. And then you build up from there, of course. But he thought that the rope would burn for some reason. So and it kind of just melted. And then he learned... that deep woods off is highly flammable.
Oh, my gosh.
So he made sort of a little torch out of that and was actually able to get some sticks going and, you know, and then realized that, well, once his deep woods off, everything was gone on the inside. He just tossed that into the fire, into the coals there.
That's not a good idea.
Exploded. Yeah, they explode. I mean, it's this huge mushroom cloud. And, of course, we're all terrified. But then we all throw our empty aerosol cans onto the fire, too. I know, it's just all of these... This is how you learn by doing these dumb things like that.
Yeah, and you, you mentioned that the camp counselors were sunbathing at the beach instead of watching you guys throw aerosol cans into the fire, but they were also skinny dipping, weren't they?
Yeah, you know, and this, look back on this, and yeah, they were skinny dipping, and of course, you know, I was, I think, 9 years old then, wanted nothing to do with any of that. None of the campers did, of course. And then I think they were just sunbathing naked there. I'm like, wow, we don't really do that anymore. That would, you know.
Yeah.
But back then it was just, they all did that. I mean, that's, once you're out in the woods, you know, you're sort of free. I mean, so times have changed that way. And also with the canoe trips up into the Boundary Waters or up into northern Wisconsin on the river trips, they always have a cell phone or a satellite phone so you can always get out. And, you know, the trip that we took, we had nothing like that. The counselor actually had a dime taped into the first aid kit that was our emergency contact.
Gosh.
So he had to, I mean, if anything came up, and it did, of course, he had to hitchhike into town. We had to find a road because we're in the middle of nowhere. Hitchhike into town, find a payphone, and then call and try to figure out where we are enough so a van could come and get us.
That's so funny.
A little different.
Yeah, it is. And the reason I brought up the camp counselors were around, but they're not watching you 100% of the time. So you can maybe get away with experimentation a little bit, can't you?
Yeah. I mean, technically, they are watching you, technically. I mean, but it's, you know, every moment of the day, you know, they're not. And that's where... You know, we're in this sort of surveillance culture where we want to be able to watch our kids at all times. And the only way they're going to learn to be independent is to let them be independent. Let them go out. Let them do these things. I just got back from Norway, and our friends over there have a 13-year-old daughter in Oslo that they let go out on the trams and take the ferry across the fjord to see her friend all alone. I mean, it's a really... We've changed so much that we want to be so protective of our kids that, you know, that becomes too much and they don't learn to be independent.
Yeah, and the camp counselors are watching most of the time, and they're also playing jokes on you. Like, didn't you go snipe hunting one time?
Yeah. Yeah, all the different, you know, sidehill gougers, all these different mythical beasts out there, and snipe, which I learned were these birds that were supposedly delicious to eat. And I don't know why I would want to eat just a raw bird out there. But yeah, going on these snipe hunts, and we have to catch these snipe out in the woods, you know, with our flashlights at night with our pillowcase, and then they always escape, and we never catch one, and yeah.
Yeah.
All the tricks they play.
And you did learn to be very self-sufficient, though, if I remember that story correctly. You got separated from the group and had to find your way back without, I guess you didn't have a flashlight that was working or something, and
found
something else.
Yeah, and you realize that, wow, once it gets dark, that it's not so bad. I mean, the darkness, in a way, is sort of protects you. You know, you think that everything's going to get you, but then you just become really acutely aware of what's going on and the sounds, and your eyes adjust, of course, to the light, and then you can see what's going on and able to find your way back. And that's when I found foxfire out in the woods, which is pretty amazing if you've ever seen it.
I have not. Tell us what it is exactly.
So it's, what is it? It's a phosphorescent sort of wood that is rotting, and it gets these microbes in it that glow. They glow kind of greenish, and you can't see it if there's any light, so you need to have a really dark night. And it looks almost like crystals, like green crystals, and it's really remarkable. It's sort of magical almost.
I'm going to have to look for that the next time I'm out on a hike at night. It's something. Is that something you'd see, like the moss, the green mossy stuff, and during the day, and that actually at night can be, it looks like a light?
Well, it's, I don't know, it's not really moss. It's more in wood, so you can find it. But you have to turn your flashlight off. You have to walk in the dark to find it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun.
So, and when this all started with me saying that that maybe you didn't want to be in the basement on your video games, and I'm just wondering if you think, you know, kids today would rather have screen time than nature time.
Well, they think so, yes. Mm-hmm. They definitely think so. I mean, I have kids of my own, and getting them off of their little devices. But once, and we have the same issue with, they come into camp, and we take away, you know, we go through customs, and we do it because it's an Italian camp. And so we, you know, make believe that they're crossing the border. And so we go through and, well, you know, their cell phone, it has to go away for those 2 weeks. And at first, a lot of them are just very nervous about not having that with them all the time. And some actually have a decoy. They have an old cell phone, and then they actually have their real cell phone hidden away.
Eventually
you'll find that. I know. But once they realize, you know, after that first, I don't know, really a couple hours, they realize, like, well, why do I want that cell phone? And it's more the parents often want to keep tabs of their kids. And so nowadays, you know, we take pictures of the kids and even have little videos of different events or songs or something that we post up on the website so the parents can keep tabs on what's going on, or just to keep, you know, to find out what's happening there. And the parents, I even joked, because they really want to know all the time what the photos are, what's happening. Like, really, you know, this is 2 weeks at camp. You can be away. And I said, you probably would even like if we had cameras, live stream cameras going right to, oh, that would be great. That would be great. Seriously, they want to be able to watch the kids. I'm like, just let them be.
We are talking with Eric Dregney. He is the author of You're Sending Me Where? Dispatches from Summer Camp. And we're welcoming your memories, your questions, your thoughts. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're talking about what we can learn from summer camp and whether we should be getting kids today to summer camp to get them off their screens, to unplug them from their screens and help them make connections with nature and other people. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network.
With Joe Spivey, he developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner.
So is that what you remember from summer camp? Poison ivy and not great food. What are your memories of summer camp, and what do you think you learned from summer camp. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We are talking with Eric Dregney. He teaches English at Concordia University in St. Paul, Minnesota. He is the author of many books, including his latest, You're Sending Me Where? Dispatches from Summer Camp, which talks about his time at camp, including a wilderness camp in Wisconsin. He also was a camp counselor, and he is now the dean of an Italian immersion camp in Minnesota. We'll get to calls in just a moment, but I did want to ask a little bit, Eric, about this Italian immersion camp that you are the dean of. So do you camp and eat spaghetti, or what's going on with that?
Essentially. Yeah, we're actually the only immersion, like, sleepover camp in the country. And you think northern Minnesota, there are many Italians up there. But, yeah, it's part of the Concordia Language Villages. And, like, in the summer, we have these native, we have about a third of the staff that's native Italian that come over. And then the rest of the staff are, you know, from the Midwest or different places. Some from, you know, Madison, from the Italian department there, that come over, and there are counselors for the summer. So it's, you enter in, and it's all Italian food. We have little stores.
And you speak Italian, too?
The whole time.
Oh, yeah. How great. So only kids? Can I go to this, or is it just for kids?
Well, we used to do a family camp, and we do an adult week as well, which, of course, is very different because, you know, it's a little less goofy than, you know, than summer camp because... you know, one of the things with kids is they like that full immersion because they're used to not really understanding adults anyway. And so then when they get a foreign language, they, you know, get it up, they pick it up little at a time, and all the different songs and all the different activities and doing all of this stuff. So you learn by doing. And going back to the whole Poison Ivy there from the song.
Oh, yeah.
we have these, we have about 5 or 6 native Italians who come over, mostly from, actually this summer we have a bunch from Bergamo up in northern Italy, and they are worried about the bears, they're worried about the wolves, they're worried about, you know, cougars or lynx or, you know, polar bears or who knows what. I'm going to tell them, look, you, those animals you really do not need to worry about. What you need to worry about are mosquitoes, ticks, and poison ivy. And those are really, are the things you're going to have a problem with, if anything. And the counselors, like poison ivy, they don't have poison ivy. They have, you know, nettles that will sting you for a little bit. And they want to touch the poison ivy to prove to me that I'm wrong. And I'd have to literally pull them back and not let them rub it all over themselves. So, you know, I was like, okay, great. You're going to end up in the hospital. I'm going to have to send you home just because you don't believe me, you know.
So did you have a case or two of poison ivy?
Oh, it's poison ivy. Yep, we have poison ivy. But one of the things, you know, I'm not into herbicides and all of that, but that is one of the things that whenever I find it in our at our camp, I'm like, we got to spray it there. Because it does, you know, you can control it. And you just don't want to ruin these kids' summer with it.
Right. I'm fortunate that I have never developed a case of the rash from the poison ivy, but I did go camping. Since Girl Scout camp, I really didn't do much camping after that until last summer, and I did camp on a sandbar as we were canoeing on the Wisconsin River, and this little sandbar was just filled with poison ivy. I mean, and you have to be, you know, because there are no porta potties on these sandbars, so you have to be careful. And it also, it was also filled with another creature that I'm not super fond of. It was a huge fishing spider, lots of them. Have you ever heard of the fishing spider? It's the largest. The largest spiders, at least in Wisconsin. They can be get as big as your fist. At least these were about half that size. They were really big. And they actually will grab minnows out of the water.
I've heard about them. Yeah, just in Wisconsin. I've never heard of them in Minnesota.
Really?
I think it's a Wisconsin thing. Yeah.
But anyway, you do learn a lot when you're camping. What were the most valuable lessons you learned as a young camper?
I think once you realize that you can survive out in the woods, you feel like you can do anything then. You know, I had this idea, like I would go home then, I would have, you know, a hunting knife and my bow and arrow. And I grew up kind of on the edge of this big woods out in Minnetonka. And so I could do that. Oh, I wanted to move to Canada and get out of the woods, get out of the city then. So I think that just being able to survive, it's very, really empowering to know that you can survive out on these lakes. I mean, granted, you want some supplies, but, you know, to be able to do that, that's empowering.
Yeah, and you liked it so much that you became a camp counselor.
Yeah, and being a camp counselor is hard, hard work, just because you're with these kids all the time, and then so you have to deal with all of the personality issues there and trying to convince them to do things, and then with the other counselors, and then you're on all the time. And so also the counselors, they're pretty amazing how they will have to then, okay, we need to sing a song. So they have to sing songs. They have to put on skits. They have to, you know, teach the kids all about, you know, surviving out in the woods or whatever they have to do. And then at our camp, too, they have to speak Italian on top of that. So it's, you know, it's a really great experience for young, especially university-age kids to be able to do this. And you learn so much. You learn how to be a lifeguard and, you know, how to canoe, how to do all of these things. It's a great experience, not just for the campers, but also for counselors.
We're talking with Eric Dregney, who is the author of You're Sending Me Where? Dispatches from Summer Camp. He was a young wilderness camper and a camp counselor, and now he is the dean of an Italian immersion camp in Minnesota. So what are your camp memories? Did you go to camp? Do you want your kids to go to camp? Do you make them go to camp? Polly in Two Rivers is with us. Hi, Polly.
Hi, good morning. I want to say I also went to camp as a Girl Scout, so I enjoyed it from a child's point of view. But I'm telling you my point of view as a nurse at a camp. It was one of the wildest jobs that I ever had, and I was relating the story. Probably the worst story was I was in the infirmary across from the rifle range, and kids came running into the infirmary yelling, someone had been shot, someone had been shot, and I'm thinking, I'm in a YMCA camp, and someone's been shot. What do I even bring to the site? So I ran across. What actually had happened was two of the youngest children in camp had wandered off into the woods, got lost. They heard the shooting, so they came around towards the rifle range and headed into the range. And when they heard the kids screaming, they thought that they had been shot, when in fact all they were doing is walking towards them. The counselor had actually stopped them from shooting.
Oh, gosh,
that
was scary.
That was the most wild thing that happened to me. And I could write my own book on the other things that happened, but it was something else. I'm not a big fan of overnight camp because I think, in my experience, the kids weren't supervised as well as they could have been, should have been. That said, I think the kids have a great time, though. So, yeah. But from my perspective, it was something that I would think twice about sending for long periods of time. These kids were in camp for all summer long.
Yeah, and Polly, just out of curiosity, that was a wild story, and I'm glad everybody was all right. Must have been very scary. But so you're there as a nurse at the YMCA camp,
yes.
So you see bug bites and poison ivy, and maybe even worse than that. But
I did. There was another story where I kept getting kids coming to the infirmary, and they were whittling, and they were stabbing themselves, in the finger. And I finally went up to the, to the unit they were on, and there is a way to whittle. You have to keep your hands on your knees and whittle away from yourself. And what was happening is that the counselors were actually CITs, so they were the younger kids in training, and they weren't really supervising the kids, so they were just doing it any old which way, and that was why there were so many cuts that day. So that was kind of another one of the scary things. But the kids have a blast, so.
Yeah, they sure do. Thank you, Polly. So, Eric, do you make sure that your counselors know how to whittle properly?
It's interesting, having grown up in wilderness camp and then now running a camp, I see that, all the standards, all of that stuff has changed so much that we're so much more protective. We don't let the kids, we can't let the kids have these sharp knives unless it's like special training and all of that. I mean, even, our cook will make a full chicken and put it out on the table. And we're like, well, we need something to carve the chicken. And he wouldn't let us have knives. And then finally, the counselors could have the knives, but we had to be really careful. And, they don't even, as far as the supervision now, like the ratio is 5 to 1, I think, that we have at our 4 or 5 to 1 for kids. So, I mean, we actually, there's much more supervision than I remember as a camper.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, things have changed a lot in terms of, you know, safety standards at the camps.
Yeah, and like there was actually a shooting range on the camp, according the camp that Polly was at. Yeah, that's got to be, you got to be careful with something like that going on.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, as a kid, I said, you know, we had BB gun practice. And, we, you know, now at camp, with even with older kids, we have archery, but there's all these safety procedures and all of this.
Yeah,
much
yeah.
more than I remember.
Eugene in Viola is with us. Hi, Eugene. Did you
go
camping?
Good morning, Joy. If you go all the way through the Wisconsin Dells and then go north about a half mile on the right, you'll see a sign that says Camp Wabik. It's an Easter Seal camp, but there's 500 acres. It's an Easter Seal camp for the physically handicapped. They start with the children in the spring of the year and wind up with adults in the late summer. They've got cookouts, campouts, sing-alongs, trail rides. They even take the campers on the boat ride upriver on the Wisconsin Dell, on the Wisconsin River. I was a counselor up there for 3 summers in the 60s. And it just gives you good appreciation of having good health, pretty much. But they, like I said, they start with the children in the spring of the year.
Right, but the kids are having a great time, I hope.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's well, if you're going through the Dells, it's well worth a visit.
Yeah, thank you, Eugene. So, Counselor, Camp Wabik, north of Wisconsin Dells. This, apparently, Bill Martins, my producer, looked it up, is the longest running or oldest camp of its kind. It's an Easter Seals camp. Eric, so that sounds like a very
interesting,
worthy thing. And so you as a kid in Minnesota came over to Wisconsin to camp, is that right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that was sort of the camp that my brothers were counselors there, and yeah, Camp Icagua, great camp. Yeah, still going strong. Yeah, it's fun. And actually, my nephews now have been counselors there, so it's...
Oh, nice. Yeah, and I'm sorry, this was in like, far northwestern Wisconsin?
It's Amory, Wisconsin, so...
Yeah, okay.
Would that be just western, west-central Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's from Madison, that's northwest. No, I'm just kidding. I get it. And I stayed, I think the camp that I went to mostly was Camp Victoray in the Wapaka area, if I remember it correctly. 1-800-6- Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was saying one of the things that we should talk about, too, is the whole homesickness.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that in terms of you didn't really experience that on your first day camp, but I experienced a little bit of that even on my just a couple of days. There's a little bit of a, you don't have your bed, you don't have your routine, and especially if you're gone for 10 days, I suppose. How do you deal with campers who have homesickness?
Well, it's especially acute when they have the problem, you know, a different language, too, and we're trying to help them through all of that. Because homesickness, they actually do, we see that, I mean, it is an illness. They make themselves so sick. And the big thing that we get them over, to help them get over it, is just distraction. Because once they realize that they're actually having a lot of fun here, and, you know, we have like little gladiator, because it's Italian camp, we have gladiator battles, you know, with cardboard swords and all this kind of stuff. And we reenact Julius Caesar's, the assassination, and then we have Cleopatra, you know, and all these goofy scenes. So once you get them over that, but I mean, there is sort of this dip about the second day that they just, they write these terribly sad letters home. And then the parents, fortunately, they don't get the letters for a few days, and then they call up, what's going on? You know, little Bobby there, is he okay? And then by that time, the kids have usually forgotten it. So, I mean, it is something that they get over, but it's also, I mean, I feel it's a really important thing about growing up, because if they haven't ever gone to sleepaway camp, or if they've, what are they going to do if they're going off to college, if they're going to do these other things, other trips? So I think it's good for them to get away and realize, well, you can survive and actually thrive away from home.
Yeah. I was going to say that, parents today are a little different than parents of my generation. And they're so used to being connected with their kids via, you know, they're texting and talking all the time. And I'm wondering if the parents are maybe hovering more than your parents did.
Oh, yeah. You know, we had a kind of a crazy incident a few years back. This one camper who came for 4 weeks. So we do an Italian like high school credit program that they can come for 4 weeks. And the mother was missed her daughter so much that, well, she was actually staying nearby at a lodge during that whole month. She snuck into the mother snuck into camp and left messages on her on the girl's pillow without us even knowing. Like somehow she was able to get in. She figured out like when we were having our meals and stuff, so she could sneak in and do this. And then the girl, I mean, and this was a 16-year-old or 17-year-old, was like, "Oh, my mom came and left me a message. Like, how did that happen?"
And she was doing it on the sly too. That's funny.
On the sly, we're like, you didn't even want to just send a letter or anything. Like,
very
wow.
But your point is that homesickness, while natural, is short-lived and beneficial in a way because it prepares us for the, you know, when we go away to school or something else.
Yeah, the assistant dean at camp, she talks about how she spent her first camp session just writing these terribly sad letters the whole time. She was so homesick, and now she's the assistant dean. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you do grow out of it, and you get stronger because of it.
Virginia in Green Bay emails, "When going through my mother's box of mementos, I came across some postcards that I had sent from church camp. When I was 14, I sent one that started, 'Having fun here. I've been riding around on a boy's shoulders all week.' Well, that brought back the memory of more or less spending all day, all week being transported on this boy's shoulder from one activity to another. He was tall, over 6 feet, and I'm about 5 feet. I don't know why it started. We didn't talk all that much, but he offered me those rides, and I accepted. I've often laughed about it, and I've wondered if I became a camp story for him the way he did for me." Well, that's unusual. I hadn't heard a story like that before. But that does bring up, what about Girl Scouts was not co-ed? What about, camps, is your Italian camp a co-ed camp?
Yeah, we're co-ed. So mm-hmm. You're talking about the summer love, all
yeah,
the crushes?
Yeah, the crushes, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think having seen it, I think that a lot of it is that's more talk than actually what happens, right? I mean, because you think that all of these things are happening, you know, people sneaking out in the woods. And it really, I mean, it doesn't happen that much, believe it or not. But once there is a crush and, like, someone's holding hands or doing something like that, I mean, it just spreads like wildfire through the camp. And there's all the gossip and all the different things, especially, you know, with the counselors, because the kids sort of adore these counselors and sort of worship them in this kind of strange way sometimes. So they want to know everything about the counselors. So we have sort of the standard thing that all the counselors are 35. They're all married and they have two kids, Marco and Sarah.
I mean, you just made up that story for everybody.
Yeah, just so, and then they kind of realize, wait a minute, that's the same with this other person. So then they kind of back off a little bit because they want to know everything. They want to know, you know, where we are. And now in this day and age of all the media contacts and social media, we try to keep that distance from the kids because, you know, they then want to, once they get home, they want to email them and do all of this. So, you know, you have to keep a little bit of a distance there.
Well, I don't know if Virginia's camp mate or is listening now, but hey, if you were hauling Virginia around on your shoulders, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. If you have a question about summer camp, maybe you want to send your children to summer camp. Maybe they're reluctant. Maybe you want to know how to encourage them. What are the benefits of sending kids to camp? Do you think there are any disadvantages to doing this? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is now an English teacher at Concordia University in St. Paul, Minnesota. He has authored many books. His latest is You're Sending Me Where? Dispatches from Summer Camp. He was a camper as a young boy. He became a camp counselor, and now he is an Italian immersion camp dean. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
said it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball. Gee, that's better. Modafada, kindly disregard this letter.
We are talking about experiences at summer camp, and we are welcoming your memories and your experiences and your questions for our guest, Eric Dregney, author of You're Sending Me Where? Dispatches from Summer Camp. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And that's kind of cute. That's that Hello Mother, Heller Father song letter from camp. And throughout the whole camp, you know, throughout the whole song, he's complaining about poison ivy and bad food and bad weather. And then it turns out that the song ends with him, with the kid loving summer camp. And I guess that's what you're seeing more and more of, Eric.
Yeah, it does take a few days, and it takes all those sad letters and all, you know, the food, it's all different and everything. But then, you know, they get a chance to go swimming and they go canoeing and to play soccer and to do all these fun activities. And then they realize, wait a minute, this is actually really great.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about the benefits and what we learn from this. I mean, you're obviously a proponent of summer camp. Do you see any drawbacks at all?
I realized, like, with some kids that, you know, like one of my nephews, for example, he went to summer camp. I think he went to, yeah, in Wisconsin he went. And he just decided he wasn't a camp kid. So there are certain kids who just decide they don't want to do it. But I also think that, like, having done this, I've been director now for 10 years of this camp, there's a certain age that's especially good to get the kids. And it's about 8 or 9. And I know that sounds really young, but that's an age where they're no longer like little babies, little toddlers, but they're not, I mean, sort of they're a little bit before the preteen, sort of that rebellious stage that they get there and then they can do it. Whereas once they get to be, you know, 12, 13 and up, they think like, well, I haven't done that, so I don't need to do that. See, they get sort of set in their ways, whereas the younger ones kind of get into it a little bit more. They enjoy all the goofiness, all the songs and all of that. And then the older ones, you know, if they're starting at 13, they'll often have a harder time than the littler ones.
To the phones again, and Chet in Athens is with us. Hi, Chet.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've been associated with two of the private camps up in the Eagle River area, and I think our listeners would be surprised to know there are dozens of day camps, and most important, where I work, are life summer camps that are live in all summer long. And one of the things I noted is the bonding that takes place when these kids leave. We have charter buses that go to O'Hare, and the tears that are shed because they're going to be leaving after a 7-week stay, it's just phenomenal. Sure, there's a little bit of homesickness at times when kids come in, but when they leave, it's just unbelievable the tears that are shed because they know the 7 weeks have come and gone so quickly.
Yeah, I believe it. And you probably have seen it, Eric.
Yeah, we say they cry when they come and they cry when they leave. So they cry when they come because they're so afraid and they're all the homesickness. And then they cry when they leave because, you know, these best friends that they've made. And then they hopefully will see them next summer, but they don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you can make lifelong friends that way. I can speak from experience, too, there. So what are some of the challenges, Eric, that you faced in an effort to make it a good experience for campers and counselors?
Well, I think for the counselors, I mean, my goal is really to train the counselors and then just kind of let them do their job. But to teach them that it's all about having fun with these kids, that it's not about controlling them or doing this and that. Like, sure, there's a certain, you know, you have to kind of keep them in line a little bit. But because some of the counselors, they really haven't spent that much time, you know, being babysitters or all of that. And so they need to learn how to convince the kids how great this is and not sort of push them to do that. And that's actually a big trick, because once you get a good counselor who's just fun and like the kids adore them, it just goes. It's great. So that's one of the big challenges, I think, at camp.
Bill in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Bill.
Well, hello. My lifelong experience, I'm 71 years of age, and last year I had the great opportunity to be a full-time staff member again at the local Boy Scout camp, and that's kind of been my devotion. You know, Boy Scout camp is not like Girl Scout camp. It's not like all the camps that you seem to be talking about of other organizations. That's another topic. The Boy Scouts know how to do it and know how to do it very well, and there's a very good reason why every single Mormon church in the United States is committed to Boy Scouts and having their boys go to Boy Scout camp every summer. One thing I want to say here is the very last week of here in the La Crosse area, our local Boy Scout camp, we had a very special camp called Send a Kid to Camp. And this was a combination of the Boys Club, Girls Club, with the local police department and all the local agencies giving kids, younger kids. I was personally in charge with one other counselor with a group of eight-year-olds. And it was a full-time job because these were kids from poverty families who were kind of en route to having a lot of problems in their personal life. But I can tell you that I'm really proud of what we did, giving them a camp experience. And here, one of the things that has not been mentioned, all of our camps in the local camp, they don't have electricity. And so it means 5 nights of the kids there without having that stupid cell phone and without any access. And so they have a beautiful camp experience and then nice campfires at night and all the things that kids really want to do that they can't do when they're from the inner city.
Thank you, Bill. None of those stupid cell phones, Eric. That's an important part of it, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, we don't have electricity at our camp either. We have in the dining hall we do, but none of the cabins do. And the kids at first they think, "Oh, what? I need the electricity." Like, "Well, what do you need electricity for? The nights, the days are long, so, you know, you go to sleep when it gets dark and you have campfires and, you know, you have your flashlight if you need to, but you don't need it." I mean, the Boy Scouts too as well do a great job teaching all the skills that you need to be outside. And especially kids that grow up in the city, and, you know, they think that they can solve everything with their little phone and all of that. And it's like, no, they're really skills that you need to know to be out in the woods.
Yeah. So what can you tell us? Do you think that nature deficit disorder is rampant among kids today, and especially kids from the city? And why would going to camp benefit them?
Yeah. And it's not, I think, just kids in general now with all of these screens. I think... I don't know. I'm more of a proponent of really getting the kids outside. Mm-hmm. I think that we're sort of doing this big experiment on our kids of how many hours they spend on these screens and communicating that way. Whereas at camp, I mean, not that, you know, just in general, they need to learn to talk to each other. And if they don't have the intermediary of a phone to text or whatever, I mean, they do it. And they learn these songs. They learn all these fun things that they can do away from that. And one of the other things at camp, you're around people a lot of times you've never met before, and you assume a new identity. At Italian camp, they actually take a different name, you know, an Italian name and all of that. But I mean, at any camp, they become a different person for those 2 weeks. They sort of have to prove who they are, and because no one knows their background. So it can often be very empowering for these kids to know, like, wow, I can go to camp and I can be a totally different person than I am at my junior high where everyone always makes fun of me.
Yeah. Josh in Duluth is with us. Hi, Josh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to go back a couple subjects and touch base on the whole camp love you guys were talking about with Eric. And I had a different experience, I agree with Eric in that it's not like the big Hollywood portrays, but one of our first days of staff training as a camp counselor, I was a camp counselor for 3 years, the camp director was like, chances are you're sitting in next to or across from or very close to your future spouse. And we're all kind of like, yeah, whatever, you know, whatever. But sure enough, throughout that summer and the summers after, I did see that happen. And I think it had a lot to do with working with kids, working close proximity to people. And I know out of the first summer I worked, there was three or four couples that went on and got married long after, you know, their camp career was done. And then in my second and third year camp as a camp counselor, I watched the younger generations of camp counselors also go through that. And there was probably another half dozen or more couples out of a small staff of 20 in my first year. I'd say a third of us ended up married. So
and you said
neat.
Of us, been, Josh.
Must have been something in the jello.
And Josh, you said you were among those.
Yeah, yeah. My wife and I are currently happy. We've been married for 4 years, and we actually got married at camp. We had all of our camp friends there, and definitely stay in contact with all of those friends, too. And, yeah, there's something to it, and I think a lot of it just had to do with seeing other people work with kids in a real genuine and sincere environment and just kind of, you know, those one-off conversations that happen on the weekends and spending time together doing laundry or, you know, paddling a canoe and just hanging out. And, yeah, it works.
Yeah, and will your kids go to camp, Josh?
Yeah, if we ever have kids, I'd love to send them to camp. I think I would encourage them to also be a camp counselor. And that's something that gets overlooked, too, because it is hard work, and it's not usually a well-paying job. And in that time in college and stuff like that, you kind of make a decision between internships and camp counseling and other jobs and stuff like that, trying to build your resume. But camp does all of that, and it doesn't necessarily come monetarily, but you just build so many skills as a counselor that are transferable into the quote-unquote real world after that. So it's definitely a good transition phase and something I'd highly recommend that people do.
Thanks for calling, and thanks for sharing your story and your thoughts on this. And here he met his wife at camp, Eric.
That's great. That's great. Because when you're at camp, it's such an intense experience of, you know, it's like all of those emotions run high, and, you know, that if there someone has a little quarrel with another counselor or whatever, it just seems like the world is ending. It's like, okay, just take it easy. It's just camp. We're going to get through this. But you realize what people are made of, and you realize that people can be really special there. I mean, because it shows you learn a lot, and you're going through the same. It's often sometimes a tough experience because it's just intense, but it's also so much fun. I mean, that you know, month or two at camp as a counselor is like a whole year worth of experience condensed into that amount of time. It's so much fun.
Dane and Sullivan is with us now. Hi, Dane.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to be a co-director for a hot air balloon camp this summer in Oshkosh, Wisconsin at Air Venture. First time doing this, been flying balloons for a number of years, so I have experience there, but I have no experience being a camp director. I am a teacher and a principal at a parochial school. I was wondering what advice you had for first-time camp directors.
Oh, does that sound like an exciting camp, too? Wow. Eric?
Yeah, well, yeah. I remember when I was hired to be the camp director of the Italian camp, I tried to quit two times before I even started because I realized how much work it actually was hiring all the staff, figuring out all these details, all the camp standards and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it's a lot more work than you can imagine. But in the end, after the second, third year, you'll get it down. But, yeah, get good staff. It's all about getting good staff that you trust and then building that bond before you even get going. I mean, we spend a whole week, you know, in orientation, figuring out how to do this, learning all the songs, learning everything, how to manage it, because there will be problems that arise. I mean, just, you know, even little things that sometimes people will make a big deal of. So just have time ahead of the camp with your staff.
Yeah. We have less than a minute, Eric. This has been so much fun and so educational. But any last words of advice or takeaways from your book?
I think it's... Well, I mean, the book was all about these fun stories that happen. And, like, just hearing from some of the callers, I mean, there's so many great stories out there about summer camp that this is really a tradition that we have up in the North Woods, and we don't want to lose it. And we do want to pass it on to our kids to get them out in the woods and get them to have these fun experiences.
Well, have a good summer.
Oh, thank you. I will.
Eric Dregney teaches English at Concordia University in St. Paul, Minnesota. He is the author of You're Sending Me Where? Dispatches from Summer Camp. And he joined us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Thanks to Brianne Chasso and to Bill Martins for producing the program. I'm Choi Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.